Hey everyone, welcome back to the Innovators Handbook 2018. I'm glad to be joined today by Dave Blick, who is a partner at Mac49, and who helps clients build businesses at the intersection of emerging technologies, business opportunities, and customer needs. If there's any question that I get around, hey, how do I build internal ventures? I always know Dave is the person to answer this question. So that's why I'm glad, Dave, that you can join us today and answer some of the questions that we crowdsourced from our community.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Hans.
Anything you want to add to the bio before we jump in?
No, I would say that I'm having a great time helping global 1000s from all over the world to create, build, and launch new ventures from inside their companies. And it's been a pleasure to form teams of, you know, five people or so from these organizations into startup-like entities, bring them to Silicon Valley. And for what it's worth, we have not had a single startup that did not move forward into some sort of accelerate phase, which should just tell all of our entrepreneur or other intrapreneur connections out there that there is no reason that a global 1000 cannot engage in startup style innovation.
I'm glad to hear that. So my first question is all around these things, labs, incubators, accelerators, skunkworks. There's so many labels and names and structures for building new ventures. Can you just, as a first step, can you bring clarity in what these different methods are?
Sure. The first thing, I want to define the terms that you just mentioned, Hans, but the first thing to keep in mind is this. Any structure, whether a huge company decides to create an incubator or whether a small company decides to create a skunkworks, any such decision needs to be made strategically. That is, any organization needs to go through a mindful consideration of insourcing versus outsourcing inspiration and making an intelligent decision on making, buying, building, or investing in innovation in order to succeed. The biggest issues that I see are not with a badly designed structure. It's much earlier than that and deeper than that. It's that the wrong structure was selected, or maybe that a company just reflexively chose to create a skunkworks or an accelerator because they heard about another organization that was doing it, rather than doing it as a, you know, as an expression of their actual needs for innovation. So that said, think of an incubation, which is, this is a very general term, or rather an incubator. Think of an incubator as an entity created either by an investor or by a global 1000 company, typically, which provides some combination of physical space, financial resources, and business services. And those business services, for example, might include a reception desk in the space, or might go quite a bit deeper to include things like branding or accounting or graphic design. All right. And then the fourth thing provided by an incubator, and what I believe is the most important, this is what separates incubators from anything else, is mentoring. Whether we're talking about a standalone incubator like Y Combinator or 500 startups here in Silicon Valley, or whether we're talking about these incubators created by people like Samsung or Axis Bank, the most important thing they provide, on top of all the foundational elements like a physical space and so on, is mentoring and reaching across their organizations to bring relevant expertise to bear. Okay, so that's an incubator. Now, the term accelerator is often conflated with incubator. An accelerator is about bringing a new line of business to market. Okay, so if you've got an accelerator, what that means is that you've answered the basic questions that an incubator needs to ask. You've answered the questions, what do people really need? What do my stakeholders need, and what are their pain points? Can we build this? Is it technically feasible? What are the risk areas? Who do we need to partner with? And third, business viability. What's our go-to-market strategy? What's the cost of customer acquisition? What's our fundamental business model? What does pricing and costing look like? So does anybody want this? Can we build it? And can we make money doing it? Once you've answered those to first order, now an accelerator is appropriate. And an accelerator is an entity that helps you take those early and embryonic concepts, often with an MVP, and actually bring those to market. And finally, Skunkworks is a separate term entirely. The term skunkworks is a recognition of the fact that, though I wish it were otherwise, disruptive innovation simply cannot happen, and I want to emphasize that to our viewers, it cannot happen within the walls of a large multinational. I regret the fact that for so many years at IDEO, I allowed my customers to try to create innovative entities within their walls. You've got to get out of the building. I'm convinced of it. We should all be convinced of that. And a skunkworks is just a recognition of the fact that one needs to create a physical space. And the skunk metaphor is just, these guys smell bad, they're weird, they've got safety pins in their ears, so you push them all off in a separate building. So I hope that helps a bit with some of the definitions. Well, there are three trends that I'm seeing in the internal innovation. The first is people are buying unicorns. That is, people are buying privately held companies whose illiquid valuation quickly races north of $1 billion, or even deca unicorns north of $10 billion. Now, this has always been a big trend in Silicon Valley, right? People probably remember Microsoft bought LinkedIn, Microsoft bought Skype, Google bought Android, Google bought YouTube years ago. But now all of a sudden, non-tech global 1000s are getting into that game. It was very significant to me, for example, when General Motors invested in Lyft, $500 million into a competitor of Uber. It was very significant when Unilever bought Dollar Shave Club for $1 billion, the unicorn Dollar Shave Club. And the story there is what you're doing is a CEO wants to purchase disruption before he or she gets disrupted. So they're putting anywhere from 2 to 10% of their market capitalization into a unicorn, and they're actually buying innovation. This has worked out, if you look at acquisitions like YouTube, this has worked out very, very well for many of the big tech players for many years, and more non-tech players are getting into that game. So one approach is to buy innovation, buy a unicorn, and keep them at arm's length, okay? Another thing that a lot of people are doing is they're creating incubators. Large firms are saying to themselves, look, we have processes and controls and regulation in place for a reason, but our market is moving 10 times faster than we can possibly move. What's a buffer? What's an intermediary that we can set up? And with a fairly modest investment for a global 1000, it's possible to incubate. It's possible to incubate, or to create an incubator in which you might fund 5 or 10 or 15 startups, all of whom have strategic agendas that rhyme with yours. So, and we see all kinds of clever things done. Like Nike Plus wanted to race their way into quantified self, health monitoring for kids. Well, they can do it from the ground up. But in fact, what they did was they incubated and took an equity interest in a small company run by a husband and wife firm that's been quite successful that had already created health monitoring that was appropriate for young kids. So it got them, it essentially allowed them to match pace with the market. All right. So what have we got? You can buy disruption. You can incubate disruption by creating an incubator. There are hundreds and hundreds of, thousands of incubators in the United States and many, many more worldwide. And the third option is you can build disruption. You can build a disruption, a disruptive startup from the inside out. There is no reason that a global 1000 company cannot create a startup-like entity, in Silicon Valley or in another innovation hub, using well-established methods and tools of startup innovation, such as design thinking, such as lean and agile methods, open innovation, and ultimately Clayton Christensen-style disruptive innovation. And we believe that that global 1000 companies creating, disrupting from the inside out and intelligently applying methods that are pretty well established and have been used by Silicon Valley unicorns, we believe that's frankly a highly underreported news story, and we believe that these methods properly disseminated in global 1000s will absolutely change the way the global business community goes about its day every day. 30 years of experience tells me that we're just in the early stages of a pretty remarkable change in the way the Global 1000s innovate.
Any other lessons learned, tips you can share with us around building new ventures and or the structures that we use for doing that?
Well, one last thing I would say about the mothership, because it is so critically important to curate the relationship between the organization's mothership and this fledgling entity, whether it is an external startup that has been funded by an incubator or whether it's an internal startup which is being incubated somewhere else off campus. You know, we talked about the importance of the mothership lifting governance. There's a recipe I've seen that I think is pretty important to follow for active level of involvement. And let me tell you what I've seen. We're talking exclusively about disruptive innovation, right? I'm too old to work on incremental innovation, right? I've seen that movie. If we're going to talk about disruptive innovation, let me tell you this. When a team comes up with disruptive ideas, there's always something seriously wrong with them, okay? And it is incredibly easy for an executive team, which functions like the board of directors of a startup, what we like to call the new venture board at Mach 49, it's too easy for them to lean back, right, and to say no, because every disruptive idea has something wrong with it. It's already in a competitive landscape. The technology is highly uncertain. The IP landscape is uncertain. It's too many adjacencies away from the core business. There is always, always, always a good reason for an executive to say no and to instead choose something less disruptive but more within the core competencies of the organization, okay? We don't want that. We want to be inspired by organizations like Netflix, which used to mail DVDs to people, and all of a sudden they're providing streaming services, and then all of a sudden they're providing this amazingly good content, okay? Or Amazon, which used to be an online e-tail store, and suddenly has these amazing data analytics and other web services available to people. Those are remarkable advances and examples of internal disruption. So, long story long, all I want to say here is, how do you prevent this thing where the executives pat you on the back and are sort of friendly and indulgent, but they ultimately say no? This is hard, but you've got to figure out a way to get the executives actively involved in the program. You need to picture key moments that matter in your incubation, 10 weeks or 12 weeks or 20 weeks or whatever it is that you're spending incubating that new business around financial services, or that new, that new business around oil and gas products, or whatever the heck it is, okay? You've got to figure out a way to get this new venture board, which should be made up of your C-level executives, with you in the room for moments that matter. Joining a brainstorm, joining design thinking qualitative research, participating in an agile-style sprint, sitting around the table for design thinking style synthesis and interpreting what you've heard in the research, okay? It's just essential to get people actively involved and to give them a seat at the table, albeit a limited seat, okay? Without that active involvement, I can pretty much guarantee that it's going to be a no. It's going to be a no-go as opposed to a go at the end of the incubation, if what you're proposing is truly disruptive, because it'll just be too different. There are always things wrong. Hans, you will remember in early stages of social networking sites like Facebook, early stages of Google, early stages of Uber, they didn't seem realistic either, quite frankly, if we're honest with ourselves. They seem like highly risky ventures. And so somehow you need that active involvement to draw people in.